I suspected typhoid. The head gardener's boy had it. So I just called at St. Anne's one day and got a tube of your very excellent serum. You were out, unfortunately.
I hope they explained to you carefully.
The Lord bless you, my dear fellow. I don't need any explanations. I'd left my wife in the carriage at the door, and I'd no time to be taught my business by your young chaps. I know all about it. I've handled these antitoxins ever since they first came out.
But they're not antitoxins. They're dangerous unless you use them at the right time.
Of course they are. Everything is dangerous unless you take it at the right time. An apple at breakfast does you good. An apple at bedtime upsets you for a week. There are only two rules for antitoxins. First, don't be afraid of them. Second, inject them a quarter of an hour before meals 3 times a day.
Good heavens, Bonington. No, no, no.
Yes, 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 Collie. The proof of the pudding is in the eating, you know. It was an immense success. It acted like magic on the little prince. Up went his temperature, off to bed I packed him, and in a week he was all right again, and absolutely immune from typhoid for the rest of his life. The family were very nice about it. Their gratitude was quite touching. But I said they owed it all to you, Ridgeon, and I'm glad to think that your knighthood is the result.
I am deeply obliged to you.
Overcome, Ridgeon sits down on the chair near the couch.
Not at all, not at all. Your own merit. Come, come, come. Don't give way.
It's nothing. I was a little giddy just now. Overwork, I suppose.
Blood poisoning.
Overwork. There's no such thing. I do the work of 10 men. Am I giddy? No. If you're not well, you have a disease. It might be a slight one, but it's a disease. And what is a disease? The lodgment in the system of a pathogenic germ and the multiplication of that germ. What is the remedy? A very simple one. Find the germ and kill it.
Suppose there's no germ.
Impossible, Sir Patrick. There must be a germ. How else could the patient be ill?
Can you show me the germ of overwork?
No. But why? Why? Because, my dear Sir Patrick, though the germ is there, it's invisible. Nature has given it no danger signal for us. These germs, these bacilli, are translucent bodies, like glass, like water. To make them visible, you must stain them. Well, my dear Patty, do what you will, some of them won't stain. They won't take cochineal, they won't take methylene blue, they won't take gentian violet, they won't take any coloring matter. Consequently, though we know, as scientific men, that they exist, we cannot see them. But can you disprove their existence? Can you conceive the disease existing without them? Can you, for instance, show me a case of diphtheria without the bacillus?
No, but I'll show you the same bacillus without the disease in your own throat.
Not the same, Sir Patrick! It is an entirely different bacillus. Only the two are, unfortunately, so exactly alike that you cannot see the difference. You must understand, my dear Sir Patrick, that every one of these interesting little creatures has an imitator. Just as men imitate each other, germs imitate each other. There is the genuine diphtheria bacillus discovered by Leffler, and there is the pseudobacillus, exactly like it, which you could find, as you say, in my own throat.
And how do you tell one from the other?
Well, obviously, if the bacillus is the genuine Leffler, you have diphtheria. And if it's the pseudobacillus, you're quite well. Nothing simpler. Science is always simple and always profound. It is only the half-truths that are dangerous. Ignorant faddists pick up some superficial information about germs, and they write to the papers and try to discredit science. They dupe and mislead many honest and worthy people, but science has a perfect answer to them on every point. A little learning is a dangerous thing. Drink deep, or taste not the Pierian spring. I mean no disrespect to your generation, Sir Patrick. Some of you old stagers did marvels through sheer professional intuition and clinical experience. But when I think of the average men of your day, ignorantly bleeding and cupping and purging and scattering germs over their patients from their clothes and instruments, and contrast all that with the scientific certainty and simplicity of my treatment of the little prince the other day, I can't help being proud of my own generation. the men who were trained on the germ theory, the veterans of the great struggle over evolution in the 70s. We may have our faults, but at least we are men of science. That is why I am taking up your treatment, Bridgen, and pushing it. It's scientific.
Bonington sits down on the chair near the couch.
Dr. Blenkinsop.
Dr. Blenkinsop is a very different case from the others. He is clearly not a prosperous man. He is flabby and shabby, cheaply fed and cheaply clothed. He has the lines made by a conscience between his eyes, and the lines made by continual money worries all over his face, cut all the deeper as he has seen better days, and hails his well-to-do colleagues as their contemporary, an old hospital friend, though even in this he has to struggle with the diffidence of poverty and relegation to the poorer middle class.
How are you, Blenkinsop?
I've come to offer my humble congratulations. Oh dear, all the great guns are before me.
How do, Blenkinsop? How do you?
And Sir Patrick, too.
You've met Walpole, of course.
How do you do?
It's the first time I've had that honor. In my poor little practice, there are no chances of meeting you great men. I know nobody but the St. Anne's men of my own day. And so, you're Sir Colenso. How does it feel?
Foolish at first. Don't take any notice of it.
I'm ashamed to say I haven't a notion of what your great discovery is, but I congratulate you all the same for the sake of old times.
But, my dear Blenkinsop, you used to be rather keen on science.
Yeah, I used to be a lot of things. I used to have two or three decent suits of clothes and flannels to go up the river on Sundays. Look at me now. This is my best, and it must last till Christmas. What can I do? I've never opened a book since I was qualified 30 years ago. I used to read the medical papers at first, but you know how soon a man drops that. Besides, I can't afford them. And what are they, after all, but trade papers full of advertisements? I've forgotten all my science. What's the use of my pretending I haven't? But I have great experience, clinical experience, and bedside experience is the main thing, isn't it?
No doubt. Always provided, mind you, that you have a sound scientific theory to correlate your observations at the bedside. Mere experience by itself is nothing. If I take my dog to the bedside with me, he sees what I see, but he learns nothing from it. Why? Because he's not a scientific dog.
It always amuses me to hear you physicians and general practitioners talking about clinical experience. What do you see at the bedside but the outside of the patient? Well, it isn't his outside that's wrong, except perhaps in skin cases. What you want is a daily familiarity with people's insides, and that you can only get at the operating table. I know what I'm talking about. I've been a surgeon and a consultant for 20 years, and I've never known a general practitioner write in his diagnosis yet. Bring them a perfectly simple case, and they diagnose cancer and arthritis and appendicitis, when any really experienced surgeon can see that it's a plain case of blood poisoning.
Yeah, it's easy for you gentlemen to talk, but what would you say if you had my practice? Except for the workmen's clubs, my patients are all clerks and shopmen. They daren't be ill, they can't afford it. And when they break down, what can I do for them? You can send your people to St. Moritz or Egypt or recommend horse exercise or motoring or champagne jelly or complete change and rest for 6 months. I might as well order my people a slice of the moon. The worst of it is I'm too poor to keep well myself on the cooking I have to put up with. Oh, I've such a wretched digestion, and I look it. How am I to inspire confidence?
Blenkinsop sits disconsolately on the couch.